Hi, everybody, and welcome to Mecha Dragon, a podcast about all the geeky and nerdy stuff you love. Brought to you by Captain Geek and the Dark Nerd. I'm your Captain Will.
Oh, sorry, cut out. And I'm your nerd, James. Sorry, it's doing that same audio thing where it's like you guys cut out for a second.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Sorry.
Like I didn't hear you say geeky. It just said, and all the nerdy stuff you love. So.
Okay. Do we want to take that again?
Sure. Yeah, go for it. I mean, I may leave that in, though, because it was kind of hilarious. But please, pick up with your line.
And I'm your nerd, Jess.
Woohoo! All right. And we are also privileged to have, once again, if you haven't noticed already, Megan Salinas back with us. You know what, Megan? I am going to give you the honorary title of Mecha Dragon Horror Maven.
Oh, I like that. I really like Horror Maven. I kind of thought that because of this episode that it would be like Space Cadet or something like that. But I appreciate Horror Maven.
Yeah, I think that's what you have to be. Actually, that's how I described you in the show notes for our house episode, which hasn't posted at the time of our recording, but which will post before this episode goes.
Awesome. I'm going to have to get that on a T-shirt.
Horror Maven. Yeah, Mecha Dragon Horror Maven. So, okay, so today we are talking about the film Europa Report, which is a 2013 film directed by Sebastian Cordero, written by Philip Gallot. I don't know how to pronounce that. And starring, among other people, Charlto Copley, who you would know from
District 9,
for example, and other movies by the South African filmmaker named Neil Blomkamp.
Blomkamp.
And I'm probably mispronouncing most of those names, if not all of them. But that's what we're talking about today, Europa Report. Now, this is classified on IMDb as a drama, mystery, sci-fi thriller, which I think is pretty accurate. And I'll just read it's like a one-sentence synopsis from IMDb. An international crew of astronauts undertakes a privately funded mission to search for life on Jupiter's fourth largest moon, called Europa, of course. So,
And shenanigans ensue.
And hijinks ensue.
It's just a rip-roaring good time. Everything turns out great for everyone.
Yeah, let's go with that for now. But so, yeah, we're going to do our non-spoiler, you know, review and discussion up front like we normally do, and then we will move into spoiler territory. So let's start with Megan. Megan, what are your general impressions of Europa Report?
This movie, just style wise, it's a very docudrama, sort of almost found footage movie. In fact, I would say it actually does very much fall into the medium of the found footage sort of subgenre of films. But it's not like you said at the top, it's not a found footage horror movie. It is a found footage hard sci-fi film.
Which I don't think I've ever heard of a found footage movie that's not horror, if I can think of it.
I mean, there are, again, like, I think this one, because it cuts back and forth between, like, interviews from people as well, I think you can categorize it more as docudrama than like, straight up found footage. Is that technically a spoiler to say found footage?
No,
not necessarily.
I mean, if you look in the trailers, it's pretty apparent from there, too.
Yeah. Well, it's done in the found footage sort of style. And I just, right off the bat, I am very, very impressed with the way this movie is shot. Because even though it's done in that, like, here's a camera, a camera setup, and we're just on this static shot for this scene, and we're cutting back and forth between these different feeds, even though it's traditionally shot like a lot of other found footage movies, because it's taking place inside of a space station, like, it's really, really cool with the way they do angles and the way they play with gravity. Like, it is exceedingly impressive from a cinematography standpoint to really, really simulate what it would be like on a space station with semi-simulated gravity, where it's like, because of the rotation of the station, they have simulated gravity, but they can still float like to and from different places. And it's super impressive to have a static camera angle and to see two people strapped in upside down at different angles and, you know, things like that, or to see somebody going up a ladder, but, you know, shot from beneath them, but then simultaneously see somebody coming down that same ladder above them, like head first towards the camera. It's really, really cool and really impressive how they go about creating that sense of space. That's first and foremost, I'm very, very impressed with the way this movie was put together. And if you are a fan of hard sci-fi stories, this is right up your alley, because this is very much, they are a group of scientists. They are going on a research expedition and they are very dedicated to their mission. And when something doesn't necessarily go right, like even if they're just like a little bit off in their calculations, like that's detrimental to the type of data that they can gather. So things like that. Mm-hmm. So if you are a hard sci-fi fan, this is a really good movie for you. This is a good experience for you. If that's not necessarily your cup of tea, it's gonna be a little bit of a slog because it is a slow burn.
Yeah.
That being said, we've talked about other movies on this podcast that are slow burns that don't necessarily get the payoff for the long wait and buildup. I would say that is not at all the case with this film. It's a slow burn, but totally worth the payoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Jess, what are your and Megan, how many moons of Jupiter out of 10 would you give this movie?
How many bioluminescent organisms out of 10 would I give them?
perhaps.
I would probably give it a 7 out of 10. Not that it's like, oh, it's a C movie or anything like that. I just have to, me personally, I have to be in a particular mood for hard sci-fi. I can do soft sci-fi anytime, but hard sci-fi, I have to be in a specific mood and I have to have a certain amount of caffeine in my system.
it is very hard sci-fi too. I mean, I just did a little bit of reading about the production, and they used as inspiration footage from like the International Space Station, spacewalks from the space shuttle. They used data from NASA and JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, to make sure they got like Europa and its surface and what like the sky looked like from the surface, to be totally correct. And I actually remember,
scientifically accurate as possible.
Yes. And I remember hearing, because, you know, like Neil deGrasse Tyson on his podcast often remarks upon the scientific accuracy of movies, you know. He's never
like
also
had a cameo in this movie.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, in some of the footage in the beginning. I remember him saying that, like, this is one of the most, like, scientifically accurate movies in terms of the way that, like, the physics worked and how everything looked and all of that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. So if you're a big hard sci-fi fan, this is perfect for you. For me, I have to be in a certain mood for it. Otherwise, I start to feel like I'm in a class that I didn't necessarily sign up for. But this movie should definitely be commended for all the steps it took to be as scientifically accurate as possible. So kudos to this film and kudos to the people behind it.
Yeah. Jess, what are your general impressions of this movie?
General impressions. I, unlike Megan, I do like it a little hard, you know. I prefer the stuff that gets more technical, especially like space movies like this that are based on reality, not like a Guardians of the Galaxy where everything's just ha ha. Unlike when they actually look at it from like humanity exploring space, it is one of my favorite genres within the sci-fi genre itself, because I've always looked up at the stars and just imagined what it would be like. And just to be out that far from planet Earth, you know, if something goes wrong, it goes wrong pretty bad. And
this movie is really good it's so interesting, because when I think of this movie, I like what the description that comes to my mind is very grounded in its portrayal, which is a weird way to think of something that's taking place out in space.
Right.
But yeah, when something goes wrong, it goes really wrong.
Yeah. And
which
it's
is
not
so
like
realistic, right? Because when you're out, you're basically in a tin can millions of miles away from every other human being ever.
Yeah.
Right.
And that itself, even if this wasn't like even if it didn't have a horror aspect to the film, that feeling of aloneness and out in the vast nothing, even that itself just puts me on the edge of my seat throughout the whole movie, you know? So
it really does capture that sort
mood.
Of lonesome feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. But overall, I really like this. Like Megan mentioned, how they were doing all the technical stuff with the gravity made me think of, it's like almost like one of those M.C. Escher drawings where staircases just going all over the place. And you ever see when they like have it like animated, so you got people walking upstairs and downstairs and around stairs.
Or like in the movie Labyrinth, where you have
Jennifer
Connelly in the foreground standing right side up, and you got David Bowie in the background upside down. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like this movie. I like all movies like this. I don't know why I've never heard of it. But speaking of the hard science.
Don't think it had a hugely wide release.
Yeah. Putting the hard science versus soft sciences on Rotten Tomatoes, they have a critic's consensus. And it says, claustrophobic and stylish, Europa Report is a slow-burning thriller that puts the science back into science fiction. And I thought that was pretty good. And it is, like I said, that whole claustrophobia aspect. You can't have a space movie without it automatically having that claustrophobic, you know, aspect to it. And I was very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. So actually, I was just going to say, I really do think that the claustrophobia of this movie, which is kind of natural given that you're in like a, you know, it's not a huge spaceship, you know, it's just big enough for their needs. And then you're in the, you know, the void of the abyss of space. And so you kind of can't, like, you know, that kind of claustrophobic feeling is really part and parcel to this sort of like subgenre. How many moons of Jupiter out of 10 would you give this movie?
I'm going to go again, like Megan, I'm going to give it a 7 as well.
Oh,
I thought it, like I said, it was very well put together, and it's already starts off one of my favorite types of movies. And, 7. I like it.
Let me ask you guys this, for a non-spoilery answer. Was the slow burn of it too slow for you, or do you think it was just about right?
Well, it's not an overly long movie. I mean, it's an hour and a half, so it's not like they ran it 2 hours or more. So I think it works with the speed, because you always want to, you know, they got to introduce everybody, and then you learn about the mission. And the mission is they're what, in space for how many months was it?
It's like 18, 19 months.
Yeah, 18, 19 months.
Yeah,
it's a long
time.
It's,
no, maybe it goes like 22 months, actually, by the end.
Yeah. And, you know, it's they deal also with that time and how people are coping, you know, with being away from the planet and how their stress levels and everything are tweaking them. So, yeah, they worked in a lot. I think it worked pretty good.
What do you think, Megan?
Yeah, I think the slow burn aspect of it just sort of comes with the territory a little bit when you're doing hard sci-fi. But which is one of the reasons why I tend to have to be in a particular mood for hard sci-fi. But like I said, it has a great payoff. And once it gets going, like it's awesome. And it is fascinating.
Cool. Okay. Well, you know, for me, I think it was really effective in how it did the slow burn, and we could talk about that in more detail later. But I did enjoy the very like sort of I guess the scientific accuracy of it, because sometimes if I'm watching a movie and it just has like something that's blatantly like against the laws of physics, it can kind of pull me out of the movie. It depends on how compelling the story is, because I think that is the most important thing, you know. But there was no moment where I was watching this movie where I was like, oh, that's not possible. That
where you're
happen.
Like, I have been ripped out of the realm of reality. No, thank you. I would like my money back, please.
Yeah. I think it did use the camera setup and the whole sort of found footage docudrama format incredibly well. You know, I think you were saying much the same thing, Megan. Like, you know, when the first time I watched this movie, which was in the movie theater, by the way, in this this movie theater in Hollywood. I can't remember the name of it. But I just remember like being like, oh, is it going to be like this the whole time? But then you just slowly kind of forget about that aspect of it. And it doesn't become tedious, you know. It really manages to work really well within that framework, which I think, you know, really speaks to the planning of this film and the directing of this film. I think that they just really did a bang up job there.
Yeah. And when, because it is so grounded, when something horrible happens, and I'm thinking of one moment in, although you could go with a couple moments in particular, when something really horrible happens, like you feel the weight of it because everything in the movie has felt so grounded and so real that like, when it happens, you do just go like, oh no, oh
yeah.
No.
Yeah. And it really does make it feel more viscerally real. Not just in the weight of like the dramatic and like the, you know, the more awful moments and things, but like awful for the characters, entertaining for us moments, but just in the visual style of it, it looks so realistic. Like, I mean, you could hold up, you know, scenes from this movie next to like actual NASA footage, and it looks like the same, you know. And I saw this in the movie theater, and I was just blown away by a lot of the visuals, you know, like just like from, you know, when they're just in space and they can kind of see Jupiter in the distance. That is not a spoiler. That's like the whole premise of the movie is they're on their way to Jupiter, one of the moons of Jupiter. To when they are looking, you know, when they finally make it to Europa and like you're looking at the surface of the planet and like, you know, Jupiter in space, you know, nearby in the sky or whatever you want to call it. Like it was just kind of blew me away. And for somebody who really has always been interested in, you know, space and space exploration and shows and movies that deal with like spaceships and being in space, how it looked to me, because some sci-fi, you know, movies can be, you know, extremely stylized, they may look a little over the top, you know, the colors are like, you know, a little crazy, but
or
it just
straight up fantasy stories just in space.
Yeah, but it just looked so real, and I felt like that added so much weight to like the whole story somehow. So for me, I think I actually give it an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Again, especially if this is your jam.
Yeah. I think that actually I have to be in the right mood to watch this kind of movie too, because it was such a meticulously developed slow burn, which is not something I'm always in the mood for. But, you know, once I start watching the movie, it kind of won me over. So I'll give it an 8 out of 10.
Another thing too, like even in my dabblings on the Xbox playing video games, I love the space games. There you obviously have like the Dead Space. That's just pure space horror, which is okay. But this movie actually reminds me of a couple other games. There's Tacoma. There's one called Deliver Us the Moon and one called Observation. And there's the same kind of feel to them, where you're on these space stations and something either is going wrong or something went wrong and you're all alone trying to solve the mystery behind it. And the games have that same slow burn, the slow build. and there's that tension and the claustrophobia you feel through it. So I like it, this genre, anywhere I can get it, even in books, you know, it's just, I can't put it down.
Hmm. Okay. So why would you say that it only got a 7 for you if this like is your jam?
I don't know. I liked it, but I wish there was more. You know what I mean? I wish they had, it felt like they didn't do a whole lot that hasn't been seen before. And I'm talking about go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, like, is it because, like, where the movie ends almost feels like that's where the story should really get going for you?
I was expecting the ending to be a little different. We can get into that in the spoiler, because I think there was a continuity error or something that we can talk about. But I just felt
I don't know about continuity error, but yeah.
Well, when maybe I saw it wrong or remembered it wrong or whatever, but we'll bring it up in the spoiler discussion.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the spoiler section, So there we have it. So if you do not want spoilers for this movie, pause this episode, go watch it and come back and listen to the rest of it. But spoiler warning.
Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. And just like on Earth, in space, always wear your seatbelt, kids.
Oh, I do have to say that I really felt for the astronauts this time. Like, I feel that my whole, like, quarantine since February experience this year has really like made me see so many things in a new light when I'm rewatching these movies, you know, and I really felt for the astronauts in their sort of like isolation, you know, in their spacecraft this time, because I was like, oh yeah, yeah. I kind of, it's in a way like I get it more when people start to like start coming, you know, frayed at the ends.
Yeah.
If you know,
because you're like, oh, big deal, you've been by yourself, wah-wah, cry me a river, and then after like after 2020 you're like, I'm all alone. I'm undone.
more or less. So I think we already talked about, you know, how well it worked to use the cameras the way that they did. And do you guys have any other comments on that? Because I think it did work, but do you want to give any examples or say anything more specific, or would you rather just move on?
No, I just want to say again, like, how impressive it is, especially just when it comes to the fidelity of trying to emulate actual space station footage.
It being a low budget. You know, it doesn't feel like a low budget.
Oh, yeah. It was under $10 million budget to make this movie, which is not a lot.
Yeah. It, like, given their budget and given how accurate it looks to real space station footage, like, again, kudos to this movie and to how well visually it's put together.
Yeah. Great. Okay. So just real quick, we kind of touched on this, but, you know, Megan, was this the... And tell me if you think we've answered this enough. Like, was the slow burn too slow for you? Do you think that the film should have gotten to, like, the quote-unquote scary stuff sooner? Or do you think that the way it was constructed was, you know, in terms of the pacing, was actually really good? Like, what do you think?
I think for what they were trying to achieve, it worked out perfectly. Like I said, I have to be in a particular type of mood for slow burn hard sci-fi. And so maybe me starting this at 9:30 at night was not like the best approach, but that's not a knock against the movie. That's more of just like, that's not the type of movie I want to watch when I sit down in the evening. No, because I've definitely seen slow burn movies like we've talked about before, where it's a slow burn and it's not worth the payoff. And I don't want to say this at all against the movie. And the other thing about this movie's slow burn is that, yeah, these people are isolated and alone on their mission for over a year. And so part of the
ultimate slow burn for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Part of the slow burn is sort of capturing that feeling for them, especially after tragedy strikes not not super far into their mission, like to the point where they have an a year anniversary to that point of tragedy, and that air of melancholy lingers over them throughout the remainder of their voyage. And so I think part of the slow burn is establishing that. And I think it was actually an interesting choice to tell us that this tragedy happened very early on and then wait to sort of introduce the person that they lost and kind of give us this sense of dramatic irony about like, okay, yeah, we know that that guy James is not long for this world, but then he turns out to be like the most fun member of the crew. And so it's just like, oh no.
Yeah. And so what do you both, that actually is a perfect segue into what I wanted to ask you both, which is like, what do you think about the not quite linear structure of the film? Like, how effective was it to finally reveal Charlton Copley's character's death after the submersible is lost, like as they're considering, you know, the risk of going for a walk outside on Europa? Like, do you think that was a good choice to put that there to finally reveal the whole accident there? Or you know, do you think maybe it could have worked better otherwise?
Like if it had been other fan footage movies where it just goes chronological order.
Yeah, exactly.
I have mixed feelings on it because at the time I was actually like looking at the time code in the movie and like, you know, the accident happens very early, like literally the first 5 minutes of the movie. And we have to wait until the 40-minute mark to actually see what happened, how that accident transpired. And I think while I was waiting for it, I was kind of like, okay, get to it, please. But like, again, looking at the structure of the movie as a whole, I think it's the thing that works from a story perspective. I think if they had just gone in chronological order, not that it wouldn't have been effective, it's just it wouldn't have had the same effect. Like,
yeah,
there's a reason why this was told in a non-linear way. And I think one of the reasons for it, too, was actually an intentional misdirect, because there is one person, Rosa, who is sitting down and sort of giving a testimonial. She's the pilot, and she's sitting down and giving a testimonial like the project leads are who were on Earth. And so we're sort of given the misdirect of maybe she actually survived the trip.
Yeah. And like, she's commenting on the mission after the mission's over and she got home, kind of a thing is what it suggests. Yeah.
And that's the thing that I was saying I think I missed. Because I'm like, how come they're interviewing her after it's over? Because when that happened, it's like they don't show that there's enough time for everyone to sit down and talk about stuff. So I thought she was a survivor.
Yeah, they established at some point that she recorded that like right after Andre went outside to like fix the antenna, basically.
Yeah, basically when they come to the decision that two of them need to work outside to fix everything, and she needs to stay in there to prep the shuttle for launch from the cockpit, that's when she says, and that's where we are now, and that brings us up to the present, like this is what we're trying to do. It is a sort of blink and you miss it moment, but that it's not technically a continuity error. It is a deliberative misdirect. And it's actually not that hard to spot it as a misdirect, because very early on we have the project lead talking about how all this footage has been recovered, and she starts to say all, and then she can't finish that sentence. She's choked up, and she's like, excuse me, and isn't able to finish the sentence. The sentence she was trying to say is that all the crew members were lost or are dead, but couldn't finish that sentence. And so cutting to Rosa after that moment it's a deliberate misdirect. It's meant to make us think that all but one of our crew people were lost. But no, it's no, all of them. They're all gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one is quite literally lost in space.
Oh,
that was rough.
Brutal.
That was
brutal.
Because, like, that's
poor George Clooney.
Awful death. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought about that during the movie Gravity, and I was like, that is horrifying.
Yeah, it really is. I mean,
it's
think
one
about
thing, one
cosmic
thing too,
horror.
Yeah. When I was watching this, my daughter came down, walked in the room, and, you know, she sat there and watched like 10 minutes of it. And she's like, how come nothing good ever happens in these space movies? And I was like, well, give me an idea of a good space movie story. And the more I thought about it, I'm like, well, basically the happiest space movie you're ever going to get is Apollo 13. That's the best one where, hey, nobody was horribly murdered or sucked out of an airlock or, went crazy and killed everyone else.
What was that Ryan Gosling movie that came out last year? He was Neil Armstrong?
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. I didn't watch that, though.
The First Man?
I fell asleep in the... Yeah. I fell asleep in the theater because I went to the 10 p.m. showing. And I feel really bad because, like, as soon as he got to the moon, that's when I nodded.
Nice.
This is not a great recommendation for the movie.
No, it's a good film. I just went and saw it too late. And I just told you guys, I have to be in a certain mood for hard sci-fi. And that's what it was. I mean, it was, again, very faithful. So it's not a bad movie. I just shouldn't have gone to the 10 p.m. showing. That's all.
Yeah. You know, I think, Jess, what are your thoughts about the structure of this film? Do you know, the not quite linear structure? I know,
well,
obviously there was that thing that you kind of like blinked and you missed it, but what else?
Yeah, when the beginning of the movie started, I didn't catch on right away that it wasn't, you know, full on linear as far as the story progression. So I must have, obviously, we know my viewing of this movie was last minute and I watched half of it and then the second half. So I don't have the best, you know, linear timeline of everything in my head, like I normally do. But I didn't really pick up on it earlier on in the movie. Yeah, it's mostly.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I missed that whole part in the beginning about the tragedy happening at a different, I don't know.
Well, see, I think the tragedy is acknowledged, but they just don't show you what happened, basically,
right,
until they're on Europa and they're like considering like having somebody go out like into the radiation on the surface to like take some samples because they lost their little submersible. And I actually think that was a really good story choice because what happens is right before. Okay, so like as they're making this decision about who to send into danger outside the ship, it shows you what happened last time somebody went out outside the ship into danger, basically, which is exactly what's on all of their minds in that moment and why they're all having so much trepidation after they've come so far, basically. And so I think that actually, like, if you hadn't constructed it that way, not only would you have a pacing problem where you have this like very like almost climactic moment, like almost at the beginning of the movie, and then a bunch of slow burn, you know, before you get to the rest of it. But like also it really highlights the logic of why they're behaving that way, like the emotional logic of why they're behaving that way. Whereas if that happens at the beginning of the movie and they come to this point, like you remember that, but you might be more focused as an audience on like, come on, you made it to freaking, you know, Jupiter. What's the holdup here? What's the holdup? So I feel like it was a good choice. And again, I think that, you know, maybe the fact that it's kind of like a docudrama found footage film helped them construct it this way and make it work, I guess. So I guess, yeah. So I guess the structure worked for me.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with it. I just missed out on a couple key things.
Yeah, but like once they get to Europa, you know, particularly once they get to Europa, how well do you think the film built up the tension? Like, obviously, it was a very slow burn, you know, for the first like 40 minutes or whatever it is. But what do you think about the tension build you know, leading into sort of the climax and the end once they get to Europa, Jess.
I thought it was real good. Like I said, these types of movies automatically give me that claustrophobic feeling that I love. So I'm like, basically by that point in the movie, I was sucked in. I was like, okay, what's going on? Because that's one of the reasons I love space movies is the exploration of the unknown. It's like, what are they going to see? What's it going to be like? I want to see what it looks like on a different planet. I want to see, you know, they always show, there's a couple shots where they show from Europa's surface and you can see Jupiter, you know, off in the distance in the sky. It's like, that would be so awesome. And that's what I like about these. And it's got to be terrifying to be in that position, actually being the first person. They mentioned earlier in the movie, we're the first humans that have ever traveled this far from Earth. And that alone has to.
Yeah, that line really got me because, you know, I'm such a sucker for all this, like, you know, space exploration stuff. But like, I have like an emotional reaction when I think about making those type of advances. Is that kind of like how you're thinking about it?
Yeah, because you just imagine being in their shoes and they're the first people that have ever been here. You know, once they passed the moon, that's the furthest anyone's ever been. And then they took that journey and multiplied it, you know, many, many times. And yeah, I would be terrified to set, you know, be the first person to set foot on the moon, much less the moon of Jupiter, you know.
Heck, first person to set foot on Mars. But I guess that's been done quite a number of times.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, even on the moon, you can still see Earth. You know, you can still see home. It's right there.
True.
On Jupiter.
Yeah, once they get to the point where you can't even see Earth at all, like, think about the psychological impact.
Oof.
You know, oof. Like, you can't even see Earth because it's too far away. Millions upon millions of miles away. Like, whoa. I don't know.
How do I think the tension worked in the film? I'm surprised those actors and characters weren't just running around screaming until they were, you know, they ruptured their vocal cords.
I have an existential crisis just staying in my apartment for 2 months straight.
Right.
Can't imagine if I couldn't see the planet Earth anymore.
Yeah. I mean, deep space, you know, and this is also not like a far future where like spaceships are like, whatever, you know, like having an old Buick or something. It's like, this is like the best that we could cobble together. And it's still like barely keeping them alive, essentially, you know.
I'm not even sure. Did they even mention what year it was?
Well, I don't think they mention it explicitly, but the way they talk about it kind of locates it in like 2013, 2014, 2015 type of an area.
And they didn't have like, you know, like the Star Trek little flip, whatever, transponders, whatever they are. There was no.
This goes back to how realistic it is. And I think the realism of the technology actually contributed to the tension in a way, you know. Megan, what do you think about how the film built up to tension? I mean, particularly once they land on Europa.
I thought it was very, very well handled. Like, one of the things that immediately comes to mind talking about like how tension is built is they land actually a little bit off course and not a ton off course, literally just 100 meters. And even just landing 100 meters off of their intended trajectory has like legit real consequences for them. And it puts them immediately in a dilemma that potentially puts somebody in very real danger. And we touched on this already, but choosing that as the flashback point to show what happened to James, that was the right move story-wise. And then cutting back to that point, once they land, and I believe it's Andre that is the first to see the light of the bioluminescent organism, I guess. He's working and he sees the light out of the window, but is unable to capture it on film. One of the things I really liked about it is that most of the crew took him for his word and actually operated off of that of like, well, let's try to figure out what he saw. There was only one person that was like, well, he hasn't been sleeping and he was very heavily psychologically affected by the accident where we lost James. In other movies, literally everybody in the crew would have dismissed this sighting. They would have been like, right. Oh, he was just seeing things. It was just a mm-hmm. trick of like, you know, just light reflecting off of the window from inside the shuttle. Like there are so many ways other movies would have dismissed this sighting.
Yeah.
But everybody takes him seriously and tries their best to figure out what it was he saw. And it's only one person who brings that up as a possibility.
Yeah. Katya is like, they're like, well, maybe he's crazy. Maybe he's seeing things. And Katya is like, or maybe that's exactly what we're here to look for. And we've found
because
it.
Because they are scientists, you know. Yeah. This, it's so true to the characters that they would consider that alongside every other option, you know. So they actually do consider it all, but they take it seriously that he could be, you know, that he could have actually have seen something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If this had been... found footage horror movies aren't my favorite thing in the subgenre. If this had been a found footage horror movie or even just a different type of movie, these characters would have just dismissed this sighting and then all of them would have made stupid decisions and died, you know, as opposed to making rational decisions and still getting killed because of circumstances, not because they, with the exception of maybe, is it Katya? Like the one time in the movie where I felt like we were dipping into bad horror movie trope is when she's like, I see the light. I'm going to go investigate. It's like, no, you have your samples. Go back to the ship, please. You still understand why. You still understand why, but right. You are just like, oh, come on, girl. You got your stuff. Just go.
Yeah. I think I actually want to talk about that scene in particular where she's outside of the craft on Europa. Because so much goes on from that point of the movie onward. And first, can we just talk about her eyes in this, like the helmet cam or whatever? Because was it like, is it just me or was her like pupil slowly melting into the rest of her eye throughout that whole
sequence? That's what I was thinking during that scene, because it was right after she found the multicellular. She found an amoeba or something as part of her samples. And they show that like camera from inside the helmet. So it's like right up on her face and she's looking at the lights. And I was looking at her left eye and I was like, oh no, that's starting to take over her body. Her eyes are going to turn black. She's going to explode into tentacles and this and that. It's going to be the thing. And I actually Googled it and she was born with a physical defect in her eye. It's called a coloboma, where the optic fissure, which is the hole in your iris, does not close completely. So I had to Google it, and I got on IMDb and was like zooming in on her eyes and stuff, you know, in other movies.
I knew what you were talking about, but like I just like while I was watching it, I just assumed that was the just natural appearance of her eye.
Yeah, but
I thought that too, but I could swear that throughout that scene, it was like getting bigger. And I was like, is the radiation affecting her? Is she melting? Like what? But I think that, you know, that's really good to know that it's, you know, just a trait that she has because of, you know, genetics or whatever. But like, I feel like it added to the tension of that scene for me. To see that and be like wondering,
I rewound it. I was like,
is she okay? It made me concerned for her. And by the way, this actress's name who played Katya is Carolina Wydra, and she was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She played a character named Izel. And she had like a red hair, like bob cut.
Oh,
you remember this character?
That was Izel?
That's her.
I did not recognize her. Oh, my God.
From season 6. Yeah, I kept thinking during the movie, I was like, wait a minute, where have I seen her? And that's where That's where I saw
her. Okay, because like, oh man, I did not recognize her in the slightest. And I guess, yeah, it's because Izelle had like this crazy color hair. And yeah. It is so funny because season 6 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is exactly what we were talking about when we were talking about soft sci-fi, because it deals with aliens and other dimensions. Mm-hmm. But like our crew can like hop to and from planets, you know, in a way that's a lot more like whimsical than it's presented in this movie. So it's cool that she in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. gets to be a fun, super natural alien being, whereas here she's just a very real person dealing with very grounded but still semi-cosmic horror-esque stuff. Not because like the entities on Europa are Lovecraftian, just because they're just simply unknown to us.
Right. And I did also get the feeling, I can't remember which of you mentioned this, but I did also get the feeling like, come on, you got your samples. Come back to the ship. Don't be stupid.
That was me.
Yeah, yeah.
Go back to the ship.
And I usually like really hate that in horror movies when people are making the really dumb decision. But in this case, I did feel like it was her obsession as a scientist and feeling like they're already kind of up Schitt's Creek, you know, so to speak.
And they've already lost someone. You don't want that
person
to have died in vain either.
Exactly.
So I totally, like, even though I'm sitting here gripping my knees going, what are you doing? Go back to the ship. Like, I 100% understand why this character in particular would feel the need to go and check it out. Because when are you going to be here again? The answer is never.
Never. And, you know, and for all those reasons, it makes so much more sense than, you know, like the teenager going down to investigate the slithering shadows in the basement by themselves.
Whoa, yeah. Like, Derek, are you playing a prank? Guys, this isn't funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me take only my phone and go check it out.
Right. Right. So, you know, I think that I guess it earned that character decision more than, you know, that type of like schlocky horror movie or something.
And don't get me wrong, I love those movies, but that's not what we're here
for. Right. Exactly. So I mean, and I think that it really built up the threat of the alien beast, if we want to call it that. It's like that was also a slow burn, but by this point of the movie, there's not that much runtime left. So that's when things really start to get moving in this movie, I feel, is when after she steps out, you know, onto Europa, and there's like that gorgeous like POV shot of her like just like looking up at the sky with Jupiter. It's like, oh, man, that was just like breathtaking. Like, imagine that on a full size movie screen. Because that's how I first saw it, and it was
just breathtaking. That must have been really cool.
Yeah,
I mean the VFX.
Kind of scary, a little bit scary if that's my backyard. But I mean, so I do want to talk about the monster too. But leading into that, do you have anything else to say about how they ratcheted up the tension in the scene leading up to the end?
One thing I wish they would have showed was more of the stuff from the POV of the people, you know, because it's like you see the reflection of the lights and stuff in their face, you know, their helmets, the glass of their helmets, which I didn't really understand, because the creature, when you find out about it, they find it under the ice. So I'm not certain why she was seeing the lights above the ice. You know what I'm saying?
Well, my understanding is that it would like the ice was kind of shallow in that area because that's the place they walked to. The whole reason they wanted to land there is because they could get down to the subsurface water more easily. So the way I was thinking about it was like, oh, it's like not that far under the ice. And so you could see the glow coming up. So monster.
I do just want to say, just in terms of ratcheting up the tension, I do feel like the final act was a little rushed, because as soon as we lose Katya, we almost immediately lose William, like right afterwards. And then everything, it's like a mad sprint to the end. So I feel like, you know, again, this is a slow burn of a movie, but I think maybe just pacing wise, we could have tweaked it so that like the entire final act was a little bit more spread out. That being said, William's death scene in particular was absolutely horrific. You know, we lose Katya and, you know, her vitals, you know, she flatlines. But, oh, man, when we lose William and we actually like see him fall in real time while attempting to save everybody, which, by the way, the decision that they're like, OK, we're leaving, and they take off and something goes wrong. Like, that whole sequence is really, really well done. But seeing him unbuckle his seatbelt and attempt to I think he was blowing some like water tanks or something,
water
like
shields
that.
Off. Yeah.
To try to slow their descent, and seeing him, like, once they crash, him jostled from where he's perched and just fall down.
Slam. Yeah.
And also, just talking about one of my favorite static shots is this the shot from the cockpit of their little tiny shuttle that they use to land on Europa. Because from there, you see the pilot seat, the immediate like co-pilot seat, and then beneath the seats of all the other crew people. And when they initially land, you see the empty seat for James. And then when they're taking off, you see the empty seat for Katya as well. And but yeah, seeing William fall and die from that descent, it's in my opinion, it's the most horrific thing in the movie.
That was great, and that's actually an example of how they
only on screen death.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, technically, you see James take his last breath. You see that from his suit. But you don't actually.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, I think, you know, the whole thing with William dying, like, A, it was a very, you know, awful death, and like so abrupt and sudden that made it even more horrific. But like, A, yes, he saved them. But like I love it when stories, when they solve a problem or overcome an obstacle, it also creates another problem. So like, he saves them, but only by ejecting the water shields, which actually is what's keeping a lot of the harmful radiation from getting through to them inside the ship. And so it creates that problem. Plus, they've, you know, now crashed into the ice, and the ship is not in good shape, you know, at that point.
Yeah.
And so I just like how that ratchets up the tension even further. And I think it was such a smart way to design the interior of the ship. The shot you mentioned, Megan, the cockpit shot, where you can see the pilots, and then down, you know, past them, the other people sitting down there. And it's like, after you lose those people, their absence is so conspicuous in that shot when those seats are empty.
Yeah.
You know, and it just keeps reminding you and reminding you.
Yeah, it's one of the things I think this movie really excels at and does absolutely very, very well. So any nitpicks or grievances I have with the rest of the film, I'm just like, no, the things it does right, it really does right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jess, were you trying to say something?
Nope.
Okay, cool. So,
the monster.
Let's talk about the monster. So, how do you feel about, and we'll start with Jess on this one. How do you feel about the film showing the monster like so full on, but only at the very end of the movie, basically? And then, you know, any other thoughts you have about the monster itself, and its design, and as it being the main threat they face on Europa, in addition to just like not letting space kill them, which is kind of pervasive throughout.
Right. Like I mentioned earlier, I didn't understand exactly what the monster, you don't see much of the monster. You just see the lights, you know, reflected off of their helmets, you know, once or twice through the build of the movie. And then you only get a few frames at the end. But like I mentioned earlier, they saw the lights above the ice because the one guy saw it out the window. And that was, you know, much earlier on. So is there another type of monster on the planet? Because they drilled through like, I don't know, 12,000. I don't remember how many meters of ice they went through.
It was a lot. It was deep.
Yeah. It felt like it took like 2 days or something for them to drill constantly. But I was hoping for a little more alien. than the monster was shown to be. Because that's what I love about these space movies. I like to see how they show alien life. And this one basically turned into a squid / octopus sort of thing with glowing bulbs on its tentacles.
Is it possible that the amoeba got more actual screen time than the monster?
Probably, yeah. I think it did. Because they were even looking at it under their like electron microscope or whatever. But that's one of the things I didn't like about the monster was the way it was. I mean, the octopus is like one of the most alien creatures you can find on planet Earth. So I would expect a little something more on a moon of Jupiter. Something like you have trouble describing or defining. I was kind of let down by the monster itself.
I see. Okay. Now, how do you feel about that? That bigger monster specifically being the threat on Europa? Like, you're happy with that concept? You just wish there would have been more of it, type of a thing?
Yeah, I mean, when I see something that I can't define or something that's alien, I want to learn more about it, much like your average scientist would. And just seeing it at the very end, I like the build up to it. That was pretty tense, and especially because I was still under the belief that Rosa was going to survive. And I'm like, okay, so this is where she, you know, they blew the water. What's his face? Sacrificed himself so she could escape. Okay, this is going to work. And then suddenly you start seeing the water fill in beneath her. And I'm like, oh, that's no good. What's that?
A good sound.
Yeah. And then you see like the tentacle start coming in. I was like, oh boy. But again, why does it always have to be tentacles? So
tentacles are frightening.
Yeah, I really thought they portrayed the monster very well. It was terrifying. The buildup to it was tremendously terrifying. I just felt that the monster itself, meh.
Okay, all right, Megan. How do you feel about the film showing it like full on, but only at the very end? And then, any other thoughts you have about the monster, its design, and its existence as the big threat on Europa?
I think that holding back and waiting to show it until the very end is actually pretty standard for a found footage movie. Again, most found footage movies I've seen are found footage horror movies that usually wait till the end to give you a clear view of the entity, whatever happens to be tormenting our protagonists with their camera. Assuming you get to see it. Blair Witch, I'm looking in your
right.
we got to at least see this alien creature, but I would actually kind of disagree that that the alien is a monster. I wouldn't categorize it as a monster. I look at it more as like an organism, and we don't even necessarily know if it's a predatory creature. It quite literally could just be poking around because it's never seen lights on the surface of the planet before. Like, it might just be curious. I don't see this as a monster in the same way that I see a xenomorph. And I know, yes, that is a monster. It wants to eat me. It wants to eat my face and burst its way out of my chest. No. So I don't look at it that way. It's just an animal as far as I know. And it doesn't necessarily, we have no way of telling whether or not it has any ill will towards these people. It probably doesn't know what people are because it's never seen a person. It's never seen a spacecraft. So to me, I don't view it as a monster. You could very well look at it that way, but I feel like that's projecting a lot onto this thing that's just kind of minding its own business.
I think you're spot on with describing it as like an organism and not a monster, because this isn't even a horror movie, really.
Yeah.
Now it is.
Oh, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I mean, it is scary because it's totally alien to us. But we don't know that it has malign intent. Yeah.
That like whether or not it's scary is debatable. It's certainly scary for them.
Scary for them, sure. Yeah.
But for me, the actual threat in the movie isn't this organism that's just sort of poking around and being like, hey, what's all this then? The actual threat is the terror of space exploration and how how horrifyingly dangerous it actually is. Like
horrifyingly dangerous.
The actual, like, again, the first death in the film had nothing to do with alien life on Europa. It had absolutely zero. It was a routine malfunction.
Yeah. It was basically like a big snafu and like maybe some bad decisions and bad luck, really.
Yeah, it was just a combination of bad luck, bad timing, and not having a ton of wiggle room when something did go wrong, you know. Anyway, but like, so that's that to me is the main threat of the film is just an unforgiving environment. In the same way that like a movie about explorers, you know, for the Old West, you know, their big threat was the wilderness. I mean, that's the bad guy or the main antagonist is in this movie. It's just the wilderness of space.
Yeah.
And the dangers therein. Not this kind of cute looking little alien bioluminescent guy who's just poking around.
Little guy.
He's just a cute little tentacle guy. Like, come on.
Oh, he's smiling.
He's got little cute glowing eyes. He's got little cute glowing eyes, and he didn't mean to hurt anybody.
He just wanted to shake your hand.
I wonder what that tastes like.
He just wanted to come and say hi. He just wanted to smile for the camera.
Yeah, back in the beginning, we mentioned Neil deGrasse Tyson, and I don't know if that was actually filmed for this movie or if it was footage taken from some other thing he was talking about, but
like
he says
press conference or something.
Yeah. But he's just like, you know, I want to get under the ice and, you know, swim around and see what comes up to the camera and licks it. You know, it's like, oh, really?
Yeah, that was a great, like, if they didn't write that and film it specifically for this movie, that was a great find.
Then it was clearly, if it wasn't something that they wrote for the movie, it was clearly the prompt they used to write the script.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think the organism, let's just say, I have to admit, coming out of the movie theater when I first saw it, I was a little bit puzzled at the end as to like why they chose that for the ending. But having watched it again and thought about it, I actually think that it's really consistent with like what the movie's all about. Because, look, I mean, these are scientists and they are searching for this knowledge. And, you know, it really only finally reveals itself through all of this risk and, you know, like all these sacrifices that they made to really learn about this. And I feel like if it had been revealed earlier or there was like a segment of the movie where they're like, you know, fleeing for their lives through the frozen landscape away from the monster, that would have taken away from the just the way that like the whole rest of the story is constructed in terms of A, the threat is, like you said, the terror and the danger of space travel and being in space, right? It would have shifted focus away from that. And it also would have been like, it would have become almost like a more like, I don't want to say campy, but like a less sophisticated take on, you know, scientists researching things in space, because so many times it's like, careful what you look for. It might come out and like hunt down your friends and slowly devour them. you know, whereas this felt like a lot more realistic in the sense that like, you know, maybe if they're, you know, given the, you know, the readings that prompted this whole mission, and everything, maybe that's how it would have turned out. You know, it didn't become the Hollywood like chase scene, I guess.
Right.
So that brings me to asking.
There's another angle too about, you know, them being scientists and stuff. I really like the part of the story where they had lost communications with Earth. You know, it's like they were so far into the mission and suddenly they lose communications. And then I don't remember exactly why, but in the last few minutes, right before the organism reveal, they get their communications back. And that's why Rosa opened up the airlock. But I thought that was a part of the story, because then all of a sudden Earth reestablishes communication. They get all this footage, and all they do is just watch it and watch them all die one by one. And it's all very horrible.
Yeah. I guess if you wanted to nitpick, it's a little contrived that by taking specific parts from life support, we can suddenly fix the communication stuff. Like, I don't necessarily know. I don't know enough about electrical engineering to say whether or not that would be manageable to finagle that. But what it does from a narrative perspective is they're not, once they come to the conclusion that they're not going to be able to get off of Europa, you know, they make the choice of but by sacrificing our life support, we can reestablish communications, you know, set up a data sync, upload everything we've recorded. And that way this mission is not in vain, because James actually set up fairly early on in the movie that the whole point of exploration was you can only go so far, and hopefully the people who come after you will take it even farther.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, you know, what we get at the very end of the film is the last person standing, you know, making sure that everything that they've experienced gets back to Earth, so that, you know, the people who can come after them at least have everything that they did to work with, so that they can take the next mission even farther.
Yeah. And the lady who was like the project lead or whatever, she's back up on stage at the end, and she, you know, says, we got all this footage of the crew sticking to the mission, you know, nailing the objective and working together towards that goal. And then they show the shot of the squid guy, Squidward. And,
I'm going to call him Squiggly.
But, I mean, basically, aside from all the horrific deaths, the mission was a success. You know, they showed this new alien life form, you know, and they're like, this has been the greatest achievement of mankind, you know, discovering, finally, life in space.
It's not even microorganisms or even just algae. You know, it's a full-on, complex, intelligent organism.
That's a huge bitch!
Yeah, I mean, that's world-changing, you know?
I mean, octopi on planet Earth are really smart and intelligent, and you don't want to mess with them. Imagine what one on Europa must be like!
Yeah. Exactly.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
No, don't besmirch Squiggly's good name like that. Squiggly did nothing wrong.
I love it. Okay, let's get it trending, folks. All right. This brings me to the final question before we wrap up, which is, what do you think is the movie's theme? Jess, go.
Well, always wear your seatbelt, really. I think like I just mentioned how they were mentioning how the crew, and Megan mentioned it too, how they stuck to the mission at hand and they followed through even in adversity and horrific mysterious deaths. I think the scientists at their core were scientists, and that's how they died. You know, they didn't die trying to be a hero or anything like that. They just died trying to support the mission and follow through. And I don't know exactly what you would call that theme, but it's just everyone was working together, using everything they had to make sure, even if they didn't succeed, that the mission would. Mm-hmm. And it's all about camaraderie and friendship in space.
Megan, what do you think is the movie's theme?
The human cost of advancement, I think.
Mm.
And I don't necessarily think this movie is, submitting a condemnation of scientific advancement.
Right.
But for the purposes of space exploration, it's dangerous. And something, that didn't necessarily occur to me until I was actually watching First Man, because it's not something we really focus on when you're in school and learning about, we went to the moon in 1969. Something I never knew is that Stanley Kubrick just did it on a film set. No. But something that never occurred to me until I was sitting down and watching First Man was that people died to make that possible. I did not know that because nobody in school told me that there were failures before we actually made it to the moon. And that, so there, it's an amazing monumental achievement that humanity went to the moon and everything that we've learned about from space. But that advancement doesn't come without a cost. And again, I'm not necessarily sure whether the movie is condemning that, if we're going to go to space, people are going to die and that's okay. I don't think that's necessarily the message of the movie, but the fact that, there seems to be a price for every time humanity takes a step forward. Mm-hmm. Like, there is always a cost, and it's important to recognize that cost moving forward, not to accept that cost willy-nilly or just be like, oh, well, that's just what happens. But just know that if you are going to take that step into the unknown, terrible things can happen, and you have to do everything you can to prepare for it.
Yeah, I think that sums it up really well. I was going to phrase it something like, the pursuit of knowledge and science is worth big risks and sacrifices, or, risk and sacrifice are necessary to gain knowledge and pursue science.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable with just saying, oh, that's the way the cookie crumbles, because I value human life quite a bit. But but it's dangerous. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And if you want to win big, you have to.
Yeah, take the risk. It's not like anyone ever sat down, strapped himself into a shuttle and said, okay, you guys ready for this? Okay, 3, 2, one, and we have liftoff. And they landed and it worked.
Huh. Neat.
And then they're like, hey, cheer, clap, clap, clap. Never happens like that.
Yeah, it takes a lot. Yeah, so.
And one of the questions real quick, before we get into final thoughts, like I said, my daughter came in and she was watching the scene where James is drifting away peacefully. And like we were just talking about, there were accidents before successes. She's like, has that ever happened to anyone? Has anyone ever actually been lost in space? And I was like, no. Have they?
No. I don't know. Unless it's happened in the Russian program and they just never told anybody.
Yeah, the Chinese, India's got a, I don't know if they've launched people, right?
I think there's a couple animals old probes just orbiting the Earth after many, many years. But yeah. I don't think that ever actually.
Yeah, that would be.
That's not a good way to go.
No, not. Yeah, yeah,
that's what she said. That would be terrible. And then she's like, well, I don't know. I mean, you're just floating around out there. You're not in any pain. You have a beautiful view. And
I don't know if saying that you're not in any pain as you suffocate to death.
Yeah.
That
being one of the more painful ways to go.
That feels incorrect to me.
Well,
yeah.
I guess, I don't know. Would it be worse than drowning?
I think so. I think it'd be more terrifying than drowning because you're just out in the middle of the void.
Prolonged
stuff. I feel like the loneliness of it makes it more terrifying.
Yeah,
but that's just me.
And you get so far out and you're like, well, I guess I'm never going to make it back to the toilet. So you just finally just pee your
Well, they gotta wear a diaper in those suits anyways, basically.
Gross.
So on that happy note, Jasper, are those your final thoughts about the movie?
No. Like I said, I really like this movie. I love this style of movie, this genre, and I'll definitely watch it again, especially so I can nail down all the things I missed the first time. And no, I like it. Like I said, it's got that terrifying claustrophobia that I like. And if you're a fan of space movies and you like that feeling, this is one for you to get your teeth into, because it'll get its teeth into you also in the end. But no, it was really well done. And I give it 2 thumbs up and 7 Europas moons. Thanks.
All right. Megan, final thoughts.
Yeah, this is a very well-constructed film. Again, if you were a fan of hard science fiction, it is probably going to be right up your alley. It very much explores the terror of space exploration without it being a straight-up horror movie. So again, kudos. Really good performance. I mean, we didn't really talk about it, but really good performances all the way around, too.
Really good, yeah.
Very, very believable performances. Like, these feel like real people. I don't feel like I'm looking at actors when I feel like I'm looking at astronauts when I watch this movie. And so really, really good. It feels very authentic. And yeah, hashtag squiggly did nothing wrong.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, for me, I do think that this is an extremely well-written, you know, and constructed movie. I mean, I don't know how much like it changed, you know, from script to like directing it to like editing. That always happens. Real quick, a friend of ours, me and my wife's, was assistant editor for this movie.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. And so that must have been a really cool experience for him. And he went on after that to do some editing work on like some HBO shows, including Tremé.
So did you go watch it in the theater with him? And be like, dude.
No. He lives in New York and we live in California. So that didn't really work out. But I mean, you know, we just found that out and we're like, oh, cool. Because, you know, we like this movie. Right. And yeah, I mean, you're right. The performances were really grounded, really emotional without, you know, straying into like melodrama or like any type of hokiness. They were really, really convincing performances. I think from every single actor, like every single one, I feel like, what was the guy's name? Not William, but the other guy who died just as he was going out with Andre. Daniel. I felt like maybe he had the least to do in the movie somehow.
I think that's fair.
You know, I would have maybe have liked to see a little more from him because I've seen that guy before. He's done some more. But I really thought that that Carolina Wydra, who played Katya and who was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 6 as Ezel. I thought she did an amazing job, particularly in that final scene of hers. And I forgot to mention, one of the things that I found the most terrifying in this movie was after she went under the ice and she was essentially lost, she was still alive in her spacesuit.
Right.
There's like shots of her like just looking into the glowing light of the water and like, you know, having this look of like, it was crazy because it was like the simultaneous look of like fascination and terror on her face at the same time.
Yeah, because it's that like she knows exactly what's happening to her. She is underneath the ice and sinking, but and it's still transfixed on this bioluminescent glow. What we now know is like, you know, Squiggly, the creature.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that yeah,
there was one
that
part,
particular point.
Like she's looking at the light and I don't know if it was just like the way it was reflecting in the dome of her helmet, but it almost looked like there was a second, you know, blob of glowing light.
Because who knows how many of them are down there.
Yeah. There's more than one.
That part reminded me of The Abyss, you know, how they just showed in like the reflection and you don't really get to see the creature itself.
Because, like, on one hand, she's witnessing in what could potentially be like her life's like dream that she never thought would be accomplished. On the other hand, she's doomed, you know, and yeah. She's going to like freeze to death in the Europa's ocean.
You know, and what if it's like ant poison or something? Like maybe not going to call them monsters, but when the organisms messily devour the humans, there's something in the human or on the human that infects the creature and it takes it back to its hive or its nest and wipes out the whole species. No one thought about
hey,
that.
Hey, we don't know for Squiggly. Sure that they ate her.
Squiggly lives they could matter.
They could be vegans, you know, we don't know. Or they could subsist entirely from, you know, heat from the volcanic vents underneath the European Ocean. We don't know.
They That's might survive on algae. You don't know.
That's right. Mm. So, but point being for me is like, I thought that performance in particular was like great. I thought Charlto Copley delivered like a knockout performance again, because he's like super likable guy. He's like always bringing the humor and the, you know, and lighter moments and levity to the group. And then like he dies in the most heartbreaking of fashion, leaving behind like his, you know, his wife and his child.
Yeah, I like that scene where he's talking about, you know, how the girls are being mean to him. It's because, you know, these women are stuck in space with only 4 outfits and 2 pairs of shoes, and it's driving them crazy.
he was funny. Yeah, I mean, he was funny. And, you know, Charlto Copley is actually a really good actor. So that was fun to see. But, you know, and the VFX were just like sort of, I don't want to say mind blowing, but they just felt so real and so, you know, awe inspiring. So so much to like, and not at all low budget. I mean, they were totally convincing, I thought. So, you know, at the end of the day, like maybe this movie isn't for everybody, but for those who can appreciate it, I think there's a lot in the movie for you. So those would be my final comments. I want to thank you, Megan, for coming on the show once again.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, Mecha Dragons Horror Maven. That's you. And even though this wasn't a horror movie per se, it did have some scares in it, which, you know, I think we all enjoyed to some degree. And I want to thank our listeners for listening to this episode. Please go to Apple Podcasts or your choice of podcasting platform and give us a 5-star review and or rating. That really does help the show out. Megan, can you let everybody know where they can find you online and what you're up to?
You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. I am also on a YouTube channel called Silver Screams, where me and my roommate talk about horror things. I'm a member of Rooster Team Radio, where me and my co-host talk about Rooster Teeth-related productions. We got Ruby and Red vs. Blue coming back in November, so we'll be talking about those soon. And I am also the co-host on a podcast called No Love Lost. It is a Lost retrospective podcast where my co-host Will Link loves Lost, and I don't, and we talk about it.
Woohoo! All right, Jess, can you give us, can you give our listeners our social media info?
I sure can. You can find us on Facebook at Mecha Dragon, Twitter and Instagram at Mecha Dragon Show. And like the good captain said, if you're on any podcast platform that handles only quality podcasts, you'll find us there, namely Apple, Anchor, Spotify, Google Play, Castbox, Stitcher. And please give us a thumbs up, likes, 5-star ratings, and please review us and tell all your friends all about us. And as you all know from the IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes comment sections, anytime a sci-fi movie comes out, all the scientists on the planet get in the comment section and argue about what these movies did wrong. So if you want to tell us, hit us up at mechadragonshow@gmail.com and tell us how they got Europa wrong.
Or right.
Or right. Or right. As a matter of fact. Okay, great. Well, thanks everybody once again. Captain Will signing out.
Peace.
# Squiggly did nothing wrong. Make a trend for
Space, the final frontier.
Boom. Our music is Overworld by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com, licensed under a Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0.
creativecommons.org/licenses/buy/3.0.